BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, I'm Lauren Laverne, and this is the Desert Island Discs podcast. Every week, I ask my guests to choose the 8 tracks, book, and luxury they'd want to take with them if they were cast away to a desert island. And, for rights reasons, the music is shorter than the original broadcast. I hope you enjoy listening. My castaway this week is the human rights advocate Winnie Byanyima. She has spent 40 years at the forefront of the fight for social justice as a politician, a diplomat and a charity worker. She's currently the executive director of UNAIDS, the joint United Nations programme which was set up to eradicate AIDS as a threat to public health by 2030. She was born in southwest Uganda and grew up in a politically and socially engaged household. Her father was a teacher turned MP, and her mother set up clubs to teach skills to the women in her community who had little access to education. Her father's opposition to the brutal dictatorship of Idi Amin meant the family were under threat, and she was forced to flee Uganda for her own safety. She found refuge in the UK in 1978 when she was just 19. By the time she returned to Uganda 2 years later, she had qualified as the country's first female aeronautical engineer. She went on to spend a decade as an MP in the Ugandan parliament, helping to write a new constitution for the country in 1995. She later became executive director of Oxfam International. She says, "I'm a nomad. I've wandered into different things as a curious person who's passionate about social justice." Winnie Byanyima, welcome to Desert Island Discs.
Thank you. It's an honour to be here.
Winnie, authenticity is a key quality as far as you're concerned, isn't it? I know that you once said, "I never hesitate to be myself." How do you manage to stay true to yourself when you're holding organisations and governments to account?
That's a difficult one. But I never forget who I am. I always remember that I'm that little girl that grew up in a village in a poor country, and that I'm not ashamed of who I am. I'm actually proud of who I am. And in every situation, I just tell my truth.
But you are an outlier, and I know that you've reflected on that. You know, the girls that you grew up with and around, your childhood friends in your village in Uganda, they didn't achieve the level of success that you've reached. And you've talked about this powerful sense of obligation that you feel, and you carry that with you and you take that into your work. I wonder what emotions come to the surface when you think about them today, the girls that you grew up with.
Oh, like you said, a burden. A burden of actually guilt. One of them, Maimuna, is my close friend. She was pulled out of school at the age of about 14. One day we were playing with our banana fiber dolls. The next day she was a bride. We cried and she cried. And she's never overcome poverty, really. This shapes my understanding of the world that the people at the top aren't so rich and the people at the bottom aren't sinking further. We need to even it out.
It's time for your first disc. What have you chosen and why?
I've chosen Sanyuliangi. It's a song by a Ugandan woman called Juliana Kanyomozi. It's a happy song. It's a woman who's happy to be in love. I chose it because I find love in the work that I do. Even though it's about people who suffer, there's joy in the work I do.
Sanyuliangi, Juliana Kanyomozi. Winnie Byanyima, you were born in the southwest of Uganda then in 1959, and you grew up in the village of Ruti. You're the second of seven children. Your parents, initially at any rate, were both teachers. What do you remember when you think back to those times?
We had no running water. We didn't have electricity in our house. But my parents were teachers, and I could go home and they would light a lantern and I could do homework and they could supervise me. But my friends didn't have this. We would walk to school 3 kilometers to school. They had no shoes. I had shoes. So I'd actually put my shoes in my handbag, hide them there and walk barefoot because I couldn't bear to feel privileged. My mother organized groups of women. She had been lucky to go to school. So she had women's clubs and they learned craft making. And most of the time they were talking about forced child marriage. And as a woman who'd been educated herself, she would tell them that, look, if your husband is going to arrange a marriage for your daughter and you can't stop him, let me know. Bring your daughter here at home and I will sort him out. I'll talk to him, I'll persuade him, but don't let him do it. So sometimes they would hide their girls at home.
Oh, wow.
Keep the girl at home while my mom is in negotiations with the dad about she's too young, she shouldn't be married off, she should stay in school. My generation of women in my country, we are really the products of those struggles of women insisting to keep a girl in school just like a boy.
Your dad, Winnie, he had a long and extraordinary life. As I said, he started out as a teacher in a secondary school. But in the 60s, he got involved in politics and eventually became an MP. Tell me about him as a person. What kind of man was he?
He was an Anglican because we're a British colony. He was well educated because he went to Makerere University, the first university in our country, and taught at the prestigious boys Anglican boys' school in our region. But when it was time to marry, he married a Catholic girl.
that was frowned upon. I mean,
yeah, frowned upon.
Yeah.
And he was even threatened that he would lose his job in the Anglican school. He had been a church pianist, and they discouraged him from playing the piano in the church. They kind of isolated him, but he told them he didn't give a damn, and he refused to live in the Anglican posh area. It was the posh suburb, and bought a piece of land in the poor suburb where we grew up, which was neutral. It wasn't either Catholic or Anglican. It was a Muslim neighborhood. So he was always a maverick. He went into politics but was on the opposition against a dictatorship. And he spoke his mind. He risked his life. And he said to us, the only way to live is to stand up for truth and for justice. He was a good man.
Winnie Byanyima, it's time for some more music, I think. Your second choice today, what have you gone for and why?
I've gone for Bach's Jesus, Joy of Man's Desiring, because it makes me remember the Christian missionaries who educated me. And I acknowledge the role that these, particularly the Irish women, they played in protecting us, in shaping us, in giving us confidence as girls that we were going to build our country, that we were equal. I just am so grateful to those women.
Oh,
Bach's Jesu, Joy of Man's Desiring, performed by the New London Symphony Orchestra with the Norman Lubov Choir, conducted by Leopold Stokowski. Winnie Bianima, in 1971, Idi Amin became president of Uganda. It was a brutal, frightening time in the country's history. How did life change for you and your family when he came to power?
My memories of that time are about seeing death, seeing violence. At school, when families would come to pull a girl out of class and take her away, and then she'd come back after a week with her head shaved in mourning, then we would know that her father has been killed or disappeared, and we couldn't talk about it. People would bury their dead at night because you have to pretend that nobody has died. Because if you do speak about it or show it, then they'll come for you too.
In 1977, you went to university in Kampala to study engineering, but not long after you'd started, your parents decided you had to leave Uganda. Why did they think it wasn't safe for you to stay?
What happened is a story that I have never really told, but it was, very defining for me. A junior lecturer walked into my room one evening and made a proposition that I should be his girlfriend and that way I could be sure to pass my exams. I said to him right away, I was quite a confident little girl, I said, I don't need any help to pass my exams. And I asked him to leave. Before he left, he gave me an angry look and he said to me, I was going to regret it. So I rushed to my parents. I told them what had happened. And my parents said, well, get out of there. You can't spend the next 4 years being blackmailed like that. It's unacceptable. So they had a friend who was friendly with the generals in power who promised that he would help me to get the permission I needed to leave the country, to go and find a scholarship. I was aiming at going to the UK to get a scholarship and study there. So this friend of my parents came to take me to meet an official in the Ministry of Education. He didn't take me to the ministry. He first took me to his apartment. He said he'd forgotten something. We got into his apartment. He put on music on his player. The song was "The First Cut is the Deepest." And he came to grab me. I screamed. He was embarrassed. He stopped, put me in his car, dropped me back at the university and said I was stupid, I was childish. These things happen. He called it things happen. I was shocked. I was 18. I had never had a relationship with a boy. This was an attempted rape. I was frightened. At that time, there was not even a word called sexual harassment or abuse. There was rape, but you felt ashamed to admit it. When I arrived here in England at the immigration, I said I was running away from Amin. I was asked why. I mentioned my cousin who had been killed. I said I feared for my life, but I couldn't say that there was an attempt to rape me, to abuse me sexually several times. It was too shameful.
Winnie, we'll find out more about what happened next in a moment. Right now, though, we need to hear your third piece of music. What have you gone for and why?
I've chosen Le Boucheron by Franklin Bukaka, a Congolese singer. To me, it reminds me so much of that period where we were suffering under Idi Amin, but the whole of Africa was under the grip of powerful civilian or military dictators. So he sang, and it was artists who were resisting, who could speak, but they would pay with their lives, and Bukaka too was killed because of those songs he sang, yearning for liberation.
Africa,
Les Boucherons, Franklin Bukaka. Winnie Bianima, so as we've heard, you came to the UK as a refugee and you got a scholarship to study aeronautical engineering at Manchester University. What are your memories of your arrival here in the UK?
I was, on the one hand, feeling a bit scared of a new country, new place, don't know anybody. But yet I was feeling free, really free. There was the independence of having girlfriends and going to a dance and having fun and going to Pizza Land and eating a pizza on a Saturday.
Was it good pizza? How was it? Was it your first pizza?
Yeah, it was my first pizza in my life and I loved it. And going to the pub, having a pint. Mm. All these things that I had not enjoyed. And the library. Wow. 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 John Reynolds' library with books of every kind and comfortable chairs to sit on. And it was freedom.
You say you arrived in Manchester as an angry teenager, which is unsurprising considering what you'd been through. How did university life help you deal with that anger?
I just found within a few weeks or months there that at Manchester that there was something called the Uganda Human Rights Movement and that Ugandans were organizing on campuses in Scotland, in Wales, in London, organizing themselves to resist Idi Amin. So I joined and I became an activist. Being part of movements helped me channel my anger and to feel that I'm with others, I think saved me.
Winnie, we're getting a sense definitely that you flourish when you've got something to kick against. But you also mentioned the friends you made and the fun that you had at university. So I think we better hear some more music. Tell me about your fourth choice today.
A Heart of Glass. And it reminds me of those wonderful English girls I found in the Hall of Residence, St. Gabriel's Hall at Manchester. They were northern girls and they were so warm and nice and they received me and they really helped me to settle in a country that I didn't know and in this rainy city and to have fun. And we danced to Blondie and I loved Blondie.
Heart of Glass by Blondie. Winnie Bianima, after you graduated in 1981, you went back home and you got a job as an engineer with Ugandan Airlines. I should say you were the first woman in your country to become an aeronautical engineer. By this time, Idi Amin had been ousted and replaced as president by Milton Obote. But opposition politicians, led by Yoweri Museveni, believed the election was rigged and that prompted a guerrilla war. Unknown to your employer, you started working for the resistance. What were you doing?
Sometimes it would be to pass some information on. Sometimes it would be to allow someone to hide. Sometimes it could be our injured, helping them find somewhere where they can be looked after. Mm-hmm. But as time went on, I was found out and then had also to defect and leave my job and join the rebellion.
That meant going to the bush, essentially.
Yeah, we called it the bush, yeah. Mm.
I mean, you knew how risky it was. Was it scary doing that work or was your anger powering you through the fear?
Of course, there was always some fear. It was a civil war, but I was not on the front line. I was doing a lot of work in the rear. But I did sometimes could be part of a mission that is quite risky. But you didn't feel like, oh, I'm about to die. No. You're with others and you are in a struggle for a goal, a just country, a democratic country, a country where people are free.
It's time for some more music, Winnie. Your fifth choice today. What are we going to hear?
It has to be a song by a South African woman whom I adore, Yvonne Shaka Shaka. It's called Umkompoti. It's a local brew in South Africa in the Zulu language, but it sounds like Umkombozi. And Mkombozi in Swahili means a liberator. And it became like a liberation song that we would sing to celebrate the victory we had had and the empowering phase we were in.
Umkomboti by Yvonne Chaka Chaka. Winnie Byanyima, Yoweri Museveni became president of Uganda in 1986. In 1994, after working as a diplomat in Paris, you went back to Uganda hoping to be elected as an MP. How did you try to win over the voters?
Men in my country hold rallies and they usually give them a platform and they stand a little above the crowd and talk down to a huge crowd. Well, I went walking. I put on my sneakers and walked door to door in slum areas, finding women cooking. They don't have kitchens. They put a stove outside their one-room home and cook on the veranda. And I would sit on the veranda with them, peeling their bananas and cooking. And I would sit there, I'd carry the baby and talk to the woman and tell her why I want to run. And they'd get so excited. I won that election with a huge, huge landslide.
As an MP, you played a leading role in drawing up a new constitution for Uganda. But over the years, you became disillusioned with Museveni's government. You and your husband, Kizza, who was also a politician, began to speak out against corruption within the government. What were the consequences of doing that for both of you?
We were really harassed. I was in and out of court, facing arrests all the time, isolated. No one could step in my home, not even close family people, because it was surrounded and watched, and people would be interrogated after visiting me, so nobody could come.
It was too much. And in 2004, Winnie, halfway through your second term as an MP, you resigned. I mean, what was the straw that broke the camel's back?
One day, I get up, I get dressed, I was going to Parliament, and my son says, "Oh, Mom, you're going to court." And I said, "No, I'm going to Parliament." And he said, "But I thought you work in the court."
Because you were there so much?
Because I'd been to court so much, he was beginning to think that my job is to work in a court, because I was going to court. And oh no, I realised this is it. My son is certainly seeing what he shouldn't be seeing, and this is going to affect him. So I left. Painfully.
Painfully. Winnie, let's just pause the story for a moment. Let's get your next disc from you, if you could. It's time for your sixth choice today. What have you gone for?
The earliest memories of talking about injustice were those songs my father would play on his old piano. He loved this one, Steal Away, and he would explain to us that African Americans taken to America working as slaves on plantations, in homes, would sing these songs as a resistance, and they would be speaking to each other, giving each other hope and plans on how to escape to freedom. So I love the African American spirituals. They speak to me powerfully about yearning for freedom, resisting oppression.
Steal away, steal away to Jesus. Steal away,
steal away home. I ain't got long to stay.
Steal Away, Nat King Cole. Winnie Byanyima, in 2013, you were appointed Executive Director of Oxfam International, and today you're Executive Director of UNAIDS. Both organisations recently came under scrutiny following evidence of serious sexual misconduct. Now, those incidents predated your arrival and you implemented important changes. But given your own experiences that you've talked about with us today, what emotions did hearing those stories bring to the surface?
This is the thing. I can remember what the one time I broke down during that crisis was during, after an interview by a radio interview by a Canadian journalist who attacked me very hard, tell me how rotten our organization was and all this. I was trying not to be defensive, to say that, you know, I understand the pain of sexual abuse. I wasn't telling him I've seen it in my own life, but in my heart it was there. Mm. And after the interview, I cried. I felt as if I was being, how can I say, assaulted, because I know the pain, or I knew it, and it all came back. That's why I couldn't but apologize. I couldn't defend stuff. I defended the one who was abused.
Winnie, in your current role with UNAIDS, your goal is to end the AIDS epidemic by 2030. Now, I know that this subject is incredibly close to your heart and that, in fact, you lost your brother to the virus.
Mm.
What happened?
Bernard was first diagnosed when I lived in Paris as a diplomat. He was a very gentle person. He was frightened. At that time, HIV was a death sentence. There was a treatment, but it just prolonged your life for a couple of years. I got him on it, and he was healthy for several years in France. When we went back home, he was one of the lucky ones on treatment because there was a pilot, and he was able to be part of the pilot. When he went and met there some people he knew, and he'd not go back. He kept falling out of treatment because he didn't want to be known. There was strong stigma around HIV. My brother now started falling sick. He kept weakening and weakening, and we lost him in 2006. We lost him. And I always say that Bernard didn't die of AIDS. Bernard died of stigma. Had he stayed on treatment, if he hadn't been scared of being shunned by people, he'd be alive today.
Winnie Byanyima, it is time to take a break for some music. Your penultimate track, what have you got for us?
Don't Worry, Be Happy by Bobby McFerrin. This song came out right at the time when my brother was diagnosed, and I'd put it on my CD player in the car as I drove him to different clinics to be tested, put on treatment, and we'd sing it, and it would put a smile on his face, and I'd say, Bernard, don't worry, be happy. I feel I'm honouring that promise I made to him that one day there would be a cure.
Here's a little song I wrote. You might want to sing it note for note. Don't worry, be happy. In every life we have some trouble, but when you worry you make it double. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy now.
Bobby McFerrin and Don't Worry, Be Happy. Winnie, you still take time and I think make a point of finding the joy in life despite the challenges that the work and as an activist brings.
Yes.
I read that you are quite a fan of the BBC television show Last of the Summer Wine.
Yes.
Can you confirm that? So it is the case?
I love Last of the Summer Wine.
What do you love about it?
I don't know. These old men, they represent the joy of living. You know, they are weak. They know they are frail. They stand up for each other and then they make fun of each other. So I love them. And I think that the most important thing in life for me is to make others happy. But it's because I'm happy. If I'm unhappy, I can't make others happy. So I'm really a happy person.
Winnie, I'm about to cast you away to your desert island. You'll be all alone there. How are you in your own company? You know, you very much kind of live a life of service and activism for others.
In fact, you've touched it. I love my own company. I walk alone. I go on long hikes on my own. I sit alone and read a book. I go out to a restaurant and eat a meal on my own. It is by finding peace and joy within yourself that you can actually be useful to others.
Well, Winnie, there won't be any restaurants on the island, but you'll certainly have books. We'll get to them in a moment. Before you go, one more disc from you, if you would, your final choice today. What's it going to be?
It has to be a song by Nina Simone, I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free. That is what drives people like me, a search for freedom for myself and for others, for all to be free. So life is about reaching out for freedom.
I wish I knew how it would feel to be free. I wish I could break all the chains holding me. I wish I could say all the things that I should say. Say them loud, say them clear, for the whole round world to hear.
I wish I knew how it would feel to be free. Nina Simone. So, Winnie Bianima, I'm going to send you away to the island now. I'm giving you the Bible, the complete works of Shakespeare. You can take one other book too. What will that be?
Simone de Beauvoir's The Second Sex. That book is one of the books that woke me up about my place in the world as a woman. I read it when I was at university at Manchester. That's the book. I'd read it again and again to anchor myself.
You can also have a luxury item for pleasure or sensory stimulation. What would you like?
A weaving needle.
Oh, a weaving needle.
Yes, I would want a needle to make baskets. We used to take reeds, dry them, cut them, take out the fiber and use it to weave baskets. I could weave baskets and keep weaving another basket and another basket until I'm rescued.
And finally, Winnie, which one track of the eight that you've shared with us today would you rush to save from the waves if you had to?
Nina Simone's I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free.
Winnie Bianima, thank you very much for letting us hear your Desert Island Discs.
Thank you for having me.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Winnie. We'll leave her in peace, weaving baskets on the beach. We've cast away many other advocates and activists, including Malala Yousafzai and Maya Angelou. You can find their episodes in our Desert Island Discs programme archive and through BBC Sounds. The studio manager for today's programme was John Boland. The assistant producer was Christine Pavlovsky. And the producer was Paula McGinley.
Since the war began, my inbox has been flooded. People from Ukraine, Russia, and Britain are getting in touch with me. They're telling me about a very different battle, but one that's also having real consequences for the people caught up in it. I'm Mariana Spring, and in this new podcast for Radio 4, War on Truth, I'll be reporting on the extraordinary information war being waged over Ukraine, and hearing from the ordinary people sucked into it. This blatant denial of reality is being waged by trolls, state media, influencers, online and beyond. From BBC Radio 4, War on Truth. Subscribe now on BBC Sounds.